Welcome to the Dev Manager Podcast, Episode 1. Today I'm joined by Gwen Rawson, a veteran of the industry with over 20 years of experience. I had the pleasure of working with Gwen at P&I Media in 2017. She's now the Director of R&D at Galvanize. In this podcast, we're going to discuss what it's like to transition from a developer to a manager and a director. We'll also get into what it takes to create a positive team environment. Without any more delay, let's get started.
Awesome. Well, actually, what I was thinking of starting, Gwen, was how did you get into software development? What made you want to make that switch?
You know what? I think a lot more people have a lot more interesting stories about this. I was just going to say that my growth in this and how I got into this industry is pretty boring. I mean, you know, I got my comp sci degree from SFU, started out as a developer, grew into a team lead, moved into a dev management role, and then just very recently into the R&D director role. So it's a pretty natural progression, but about as boring and uneventful as you can get, I think.
So, like, did you start as a developer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What are you, a back-end developer or
what? You know what? Yeah, I guess there's that distinction today, but I think back in my day, I've been in this industry for like over 25 years now, so I'm aging myself. I feel like there were only like full stack developers. So I guess if you could say I started out as a backend developer, but when web development came in, you know, to play, I did both, you know, front end and back end. Although, yeah, I suppose mostly back end, but probably full stack would be, yeah.
And then you were saying that you transitioned from there to team lead and then eventually to dev manager. Was that something you've always wanted to do, or did that come out of like necessity of having to step up and lead a team?
You know, it's funny. The dev lead positions, and I've been in a few, have always been a natural thing for whatever reason, whether it was out of necessity or, you know, just someone stepping up on a team to fill the role. Prior to getting into management, I'm not sure that I always knew I wanted to go into management. But at some point, an opportunity came up, and you know, I guess I kind of made the decision to give it a go. So you know, kind of put myself out there and said I'd give it a try, or wanted to give it a try, and yeah, haven't looked back since. Yeah.
And then most recently, you said you've kind of went into the director role. How was that transition from being like a development manager to a director?
You know, it's not actually as big a difference as going from developer to manager, I think. So, you know, now that I've had sort of like enough years away from code to try not to take on something, you know, on a critical path where and be the bottleneck. But from developer to manager, you know, there are things that come across your desk and issues, and you're like, I know how to fix that, right? Mm-hmm. And you go, well, I can't because I've got a gazillion other things to do, and I'm going to block somebody from, you know, or this thing's going to take forever. You know, management is so much about multitasking. You're never focused on one thing for very long. Well, you know that. So, yeah. You know, you get a gazillion Slack messages a day, and it's all about different areas, right? And I think, you know, a director takes that multitasking to yet, I think, another level. And, you know, what you're not able to do, I think, as a director is to focus solely on one part of the product and, you know, on one team, and that team is going to deliver, you know, feature X. You kind of have to manage. I think the biggest difference is, you know, you're also managing managers versus managing just a team, and a team that you want to work together. Managing managers is they're all from disparate teams, right? Mm. And you kind of, the way that you empower the team as a dev manager, now you have to kind of do that with all the managers and their teams. And how you do that is like is different for each team and each manager, because they all have, you know, their different styles. And I think the other thing is you're probably expected to be a little bit more involved in the business side of things, right? You view the product as a whole, like I said, versus like one part of a whole when you're a dev manager. Yeah. So yeah, it's been a little bit.
It's interesting to draw that parallel between moving from a developer to a manager and then manager to, do you like, well, for me, when I moved outside of development, I found it challenging not being like in control of the product or like the development. And do you kind of find that same kind of gap when you went from like a development manager to a director? And how did you deal with that?
I think you probably get maybe a little bit more say actually in shaping the product. You're just not as involved in the maybe day to day, with the team, but with the product, I actually think that you're a little bit more involved in, you know, just different parts of the product. You have no choice but to be. That's why I'm saying, like, as a dev manager, you have the luxury of focusing only on, you know, the things that you need to deliver. Yeah.
How do you approach making sure that, like, the developers that are at the, like, I guess, that report to your directs, how do you make sure that they're empowered and they see the vision that you're trying to set, and maybe not playing a telephone game that sometimes could happen where your vision might get lost?
Yeah. That's the tough part, right? Because you want to set a vision, let's say you have a meeting, right? And you communicate these things to everybody, but then at the same time, you need your managers to be on the same page. So, and they know their teams best, right? They know how to get their teams on board. They know the communication style of the team, what makes the teams, react positively, and things like that. So these are things that you kind of, I don't know that you can do it individually as a director and say, well, this is the way it's going to be, right? Like you kind of have to get your people on board. It's the same way that as a dev manager, you get your team on board when you're doing change management or stuff like that. And this way you really need your management team to be one team and speaking the same language, so that you're telling, and they're empowering their teams and, selling the vision, so to speak, to the teams.
So a lot of, I guess, earning trust with the manager team, and then making sure that you're aligned and stuff, right?
But the same way that you would, cultivate that trust with a team when you're a dev manager, you'd have to cultivate the same trust with your managers, right? And to a certain degree with their teams as well, obviously. But, you don't get a chance to do that personally because you don't work with the teams. Whereas when you're a dev manager, you're working with your team. So then, you shape your team and cultivate that trust with your team, right?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I from what I've seen from you, you do that pretty well. Like I said, you and I worked together a little bit, but I look back on how long we actually worked together, and I think it was only a few months. I don't think it was that long.
Yeah,
it felt like a long time.
10 months.
But I was saying that 10 months though, like the developers that I used to kind of be friends with and speak to that reported to you, they always had like positive things to say. And
you're not just saying that, right?
I'm not just saying that. No, I know there's a lot of developers that will follow you and kind of anywhere you go. And so I'm just kind of curious, what is your take on developing that team culture and having a team that's, I've seen you go into a tough team and kind of come out of it with like kind of everybody liking you and delivering against things. So it's not always just, you seem to have motivated them somehow.
Yeah. It's the iron fist that you don't see behind it. No. Where do I start? I mean, this is like the kind of like the million-dollar question, right? Like, you know, I've had people ask me, like, is there a sort of like a formula or, you know?
Give us the magic pill.
Yeah, exactly. Blue pill or the red pill? I don't know. I mean, I think first and foremost, I mean, like, you've got to, you know, learn about your people, right? Every individual, you know, what drives them, and just as importantly, what demotivates them, you know. And if you're talking about a team, you know, you're looking at sort of the pace of work, maybe. There's got to be, you got to hit a good balance, right, for the team, but you might have to vary it up individually as well, because, you know, just sort of like consider where each person is in sort of stages of life. You know, do they have family responsibilities, right? Are they looking for more of a challenge? Where are the boundaries and where do you set your expectations? You know, I feel like I always share with each individual what I expect of them. And then I encourage them to let me know as soon as I need to change those expectations, you know, whether, you know, to lessen it or to increase it, because, yeah, things don't stay the same, right? Another thing I guess I find important is that when we, you know, have people help us do the work that we need to do, we should always be looking for a two-way opportunity, right? We should not just be asking people, well, what can you do for us? But, you know, what can you do to help us get the product out, to do the work that needs to be done, you know, in a way that will in turn help your growth, right? As a you know, developer, whatever level you're at, as a engineer in test, right? QA engineer, and just be ever on the lookout for sort of opportunities where the work is beneficial to both, you know, the company and the employee. So I have a lot of people who will say, well, you can't do that all the time, right? But it's not about doing it all the time. It's about doing it as much as we can, and you know, identifying those opportunities as much as we can. But you know, it's no two teams are alike. I mean, like I've you know, like I said, I've been in this industry for over 25 years and managing for really the last 10, and no two teams that I've come across where I'm just like, it's exactly like the last one. I know exactly what to do, right? But as a manager, it's, you know, to be super available, you know, whether it's on a personal or professional level, you got to see what the individual wants, what their comfort level is. You know, some people are more sort of like more professional based, and some people will, you know, open up to you. And for us in a time like COVID, I mean, there's so many, you know, mental and physical health issues that come into effect, and I think it's just important that we make sure that we're cognizant of what's going on, right? And kind of like watch for signs. And I think if you're lucky enough, like your team trusts you enough to, you know, kind of open up or confide in you. From the work side, I like to encourage and, you know, teach, I guess, ownership, right? My managing style has never been to tell a team what to do, right? I socialize the idea and the requirements and you know, but you know, I feel like, you know, you don't tell them what to do. You let them tell you what they can do and when they can do it by, you know, they're a lot more invested when they're the ones telling you what they can do. You know, it doesn't mean you can't challenge, you know, estimates or things like that, but yeah, I don't know. I think get to know your team, cultivate trust, so essential, and you know, learn about what drives them and where they want to go. How do you get them there and make it, you know, interesting and exciting on the way? And it's different for different people. And then, you know, I just think on a team, you know, challenging too much kind of shows a lack of trust. Challenging too little kind of leads to complacency sometimes, right? So it's just all about, you know, the big word in my vocabulary is balance, And interestingly enough, the team, my current team, came out with that as one of the core values. So you know, we knew we were going to get along then, right? so you know, like you do new features and tech debt, right? Like, how do you mitigate user issues? Leading, you know, does an individual want to lead the architecture work for a feature, or do they just want to be an individual contributor for that particular project, right? Working hard, having fun, work life. It's all about balance, right? And because these things are never exclusive of each other. I think it's important to use, you know, inclusive language, right? It's mm-hmm. our team, right? What we can achieve, what we are planning on doing this sprint. It shows that you're in with the team. You're in it together. You know, you've got their backs, and that's really important. But of course, you know, these are not just words, right? Because when push comes to shove, you better not be selling anything that you're not ready to go to bat for. So yeah.
Well, that's when you get some people who lose trust, because it's we when it comes to the problems, and it's I when it comes to the exactly, taking a credit, right? Exactly. So you got to make sure it goes both ways.
Yeah, totally. I always say, as a manager, don't expect credit when things go well, but when things go badly, it's your neck comes the line. So yeah. Expect that every time. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. A couple of words that stood out to me, I mean, obviously balance, but the ownership one I found interesting, because I found like sometimes people want teams to have ownership of the delivery, but then no ownership of the product. It almost like no ownership of the vision. Have you come across that? And then, you know, how do you deal with that when maybe the team feels disconnected?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you're going to tell a team, sort of what, product or what features you'd like to get out there, but you know, if you see them as a vehicle of delivery, they're gonna see that very quickly, right? And it's hard to get invested in something that you're not sort of sold on, right? I just think that, you know, it's the same. If I were to ask you something, hey, you know, Rassam, when do you think you can do this by? And you give me a date versus I say, Rassam, I need this by this time. I mean, which would be more likely, you know, the date that you'd be able to stick to, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's always a challenge, right? Because I think in our industry, we always need the product yesterday, really.
Yeah.
So I think more so than not giving them ownership of the product, it's not giving them ownership of the being able to come up with an estimate and telling you when they can get it done by. Because, you know, I always say it's called computer science, but it's not an exact science. You can do two completely similar projects on two different tech stack, and they'll take two vastly different times. And I think that's why it's important to have a part of it, like development background, when you're going to be a dev manager, because you understand the complexities of these things, right? Ever have like an issue where it looks like it's just a one line fix, and you start digging and it just unravels and unravels, and yeah, you know, a week later,
it's always those one line fixes that end up taking the longest time, right?
Yeah. And how many times have you heard, you know, yeah, just come up with a, you know, a proof of concept, just a proof of concept. We're productizing that proof of concept. Now we're releasing that proof of concept, right? Yeah. And all the crap code that goes with it. But, you know, I mean, that's another thing that I think development teams like to own as well. You know, the ability to be able to go back and fix things. They know they've cut corners somewhere because of a deadline or something. We want to be able to, you know, work on the tech debt. So then you're not, you know, it's not an ever-growing mountain of tech debt that you just, you know, you just can't see the end of, right? Everything's kind of put together by Band-Aids.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That doesn't ever happen.
No, I've never heard of that.
Oh, no. Yeah. I think that is one thing that developers feel very uncomfortable with, though.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I feel like that's tends to be also a very demotivating thing for teams. Like those things are the ones that there's no dollar value on fixing a bunch of a thousand back tickets in the backlog that have tech debt. But it definitely has a moral, or morale, I should say. It has a morale impact, when they're not being addressed.
Yeah, totally, right? And a lot of times what will come out of the tech debt is customer issues, right? Like, how many times have you seen, customer issues that come in and it's the same issue, but you're like, but to fix that would just take too long. So you never bite the bullet and go back and fix it. And then, 7 years down the road, you're still there. Yeah. So, and every time a customer issue comes in, I mean, it's a huge time suck, right? So, yeah. That's true. Nobody likes working under that kind of pressure to fix it.
So. Yeah, well, it's always better to be ahead of things, right? Than try to be always putting out fires. And putting out fires cause a lot of burnout.
Totally. It's never possible to have, bug-free code, obviously. But, can you get it to a point where it's reasonable? We have to live with some of it.
Yeah.
For sure. Right. But, sure.
Interesting. You mentioned kind of 2020 and unfortunate events and the fact that we all have to kind of work from home. And I know personally, I feel lucky that we get that opportunity in our industry. But it did come with a lot of challenges for managers. Kind of what were some challenges your team faced? And, did you have to switch your style up a little bit to account for the permanent work from home?
Yeah, I think, when we first started, like you said, I mean, in our industry, we're very fortunate to be able to do this. I mean, since I think my first co-op job, it's been a, I've got to stay home today because I'm expecting, a delivery of some kind or whatever, for people who have children. That is, an amazing perk to have because, a half day, a pro D day, you have no childcare. We're able to do it and we're set up well to do it. It's something that I wake up every day and actually woke up every day in 2020 being thankful for because who knew, who saw this, right? And when we first started, I mean, we didn't think it would be this long. So it's been. You're okay with it. I'm okay with it. There's some people who really feel the lack of the face-to-face interaction, meeting up in the lunchroom, right? Playing board games with a group of people. It's day in, day out at your desk with a computer. And you're not, this is how we talk to everybody. It's via Zoom. And yeah, there's a difference. I mean, I've seen a lot of people who've complained about just a lack of physical activity, right? Lack of movement. Can't go out for lunches. There's just no socialization. The team morale thing, throughout that year, we're still going through it. I don't think it's something that an individual manager can do alone, to hold up the morale, and it's unreasonable to expect. So I think it's really, really important that the company as a whole, come out and offer support. Our CEO at Galvanize, Laurie Schultz, was really great with this. I remember it was weekly constant communication, daily at one point, and the whole leadership team took turns sharing their experiences throughout COVID, just being human. Some were pretty personal stories and I think that resonated with everyone. We're all dealing with it in one way or another. It was also important, I think, for the leadership team that everybody got to keep their job. I mean, that was the one thing I thought was really great, you know, about this company going through that. And actually, believe it or not, in R&D, we actually switched to a new tech stack in that time. So, wow. Yeah, I know, right? I think the plan was in the works before COVID hit, but the fact that we went through it, we internally offered training to the developers, basically. Our VP came up with courses and assignments, and it was great, because I think part of it was also a distraction, right, from what was going on in the world. So yeah, everybody's learning, people are engaged, you know, so we're busy in sort of like a good and interesting way of being busy. Yeah. And you know, developers, they like to learn, you know, new things as well, and so that helped. But yeah, I won't lie. It's like onboarding and stuff. I mean, right. It's a whole other thing.
That's actually, yeah. I had a couple onboardings during COVID as well. And I found it challenging with, you know, like, I guess the cultural fit, right? Like, you got to kind of communicate cultural fit through Skype or Zoom or like video chat.
How do you know, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah. How did you, like, you know, are there things you did specifically that you maybe... more than like more one-on-ones or any kind of
lots of that, right, getting on calls and lots of check-ins. So we had to onboard an R&D manager during COVID, so I can imagine that, you know, it was not only challenging for us, but it was challenging for the individual as well, because, you know, you don't get to meet your team face to face. You know, how does that work? And I think that the thing that we miss most when we work remotely like this is you can't hear or see what's going on peripherally, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there's no ad hoc conversations. You know, there's been times where you're at the office and someone's talking about an issue and you're like, I ran into that exact same thing yesterday. How did you get around it, right? And then there's that interaction, that solution. And then people are less likely to ping, I think, like over Slack or, you know, whatever, as opposed to like someone at work where you hear something and, you know, it becomes an ad hoc conversation. So I really think that we're missing that. So much to be said for body language as well.
That's true. Right? Uh-huh. Well, it's funny you mentioned the pinging thing, because I found that to be a challenge for myself, and I've noticed my team doing the same thing where, you know, like you said, like you overhear somebody talking about a problem, you just turn around and then a 5-minute chat, but now it becomes a, hey, on the messaging, and then you wait 5 minutes, the person's like, hey, and then you know, suddenly it's like 20 minutes for you to get at something that you would have resolved in like 2 minutes, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, because I think as developers are, you know, they like solving issues, right? So they're problem solvers. And I think that's the first instinct, is to try to do it yourself. So it's like, I don't want to bother anybody else, I'm going to try to figure it out. So like, how long do you spend, you know, figuring out before you go, okay, you know what, I'm going to ping somebody. Yeah. So that is definitely a challenge. But one thing I did feel though is when I got onboarded at Galvanize ACL at the time, there's a lot of documentation, right? The basics are in place. So when I went through it, I thought it was great. It was really thorough. You know, it gave me the basics of what's expected, but I don't think I really understood fully the value of it until COVID, you know. It's great, I think, for laying the foundation and, you know, versus having to figure it out on the spot, right? Like I said, there's just a lot of check-ins as well that you need to do to make sure that the person's feeling supported, that they're not, I mean, they're new to the company. Yeah. So it's kind of like, well, I don't really know what to do, so point me in the right direction. So now if you've got documentation of things that need to be done, what you need to be reading, you know, what you need to sign, who you need to see. These are all the systems that you need to be onboarded to. Do you have access? You know, it's much easier, I think, to actually have that person rather than have that person just sitting there going, okay, what do I do next? Right. Mm-hmm. I think too often we have people who start in a company and learn on the job. And, you know, while there's got to be some of that, I think getting the basics in place, it's definitely a good thing because it gets people comfortable faster and then you get them to hit the ground running a lot quicker. We also did have a co-op student with us, and, you know, that's pretty hard because they tend to have a lot less tech experience, a lot less work experience, and now they're remote, right? They're not like completely embedded in the team. So,
yeah, I can imagine that being tough, just even because you want to ask questions, right? Like, I think that's one of the things, like, you know, you want to ask 101 questions and that's perfect, right?
Yeah.
But then I guess human hesitation is like, I don't want to bother people.
Right.
Did you have to, did you have to set expectations with that, with your new hires, that like, it's okay to ask all these questions?
Yeah, or... totally. But I think, you know, if you've got, I guess, a Slack group where it's the whole team, it's good so that I guess a person can you know, ask a question there, and then like at work, it doesn't have to be always the one person. But what we do have is also the buddy system. So you actually pair the one person to make sure that this person can always come to you if all else fails, and, you know, and move forward. It was just way more intense, I think, right, than if you had been like physically next to people, because you could have asked anybody. The other thing is also, you know, some people have this, right? Like posting it in a channel is there for all to see. What if it's a stupid question? You know what I mean? It's like, and people are less, you know, are a little bit more reluctant to do that and stuff like that. So yeah, definitely. It was challenging.
But, I bet. Is there any, I guess, tools or tips you have for gauging if people are, I guess, happy in the job, especially nowadays? And because I find, like, you know, it becomes a challenge where, you know, you get on a meeting and you want to obviously do status updates and all this good stuff. But sometimes, you know, you might fall into a trap of it just being a what did you get done kind of activity.
And what tasks you go it's through, a status report.
And instead of like the human side of it, right? Are there things you do to kind of not fall into that trap?
You know, a lot of like frequent conversations. Sometimes you call them one-on-ones. But they're really conversations, right? And I find that they really help. There's a lot of times where I think we go into one-on-ones and we're like, "Oh, what are you doing now? What can I help you with?" And you know, but I have been into one-on-ones where we do actually nothing but shoot the breeze. It's just what's going on, whether it's home, you know, people who've just moved or just bought a car or went on a great vacation, had a great weekend, you know, and it doesn't always have to be about work, right? And they feel like you're there and you're listening, you know, you're looking out for opportunities for them. You're you know, encouraging open dialogue, I think. I think it's worthwhile making them feel that they can put anything on the table. But at the same time, I think, you know, it's imperative though that you be honest, right? Let them know what you can and cannot change. You know, sometimes like they're just things that, it's outside of your, you know, realm of influence, and you have to be honest about that. But I think if there's that trust and they really do feel like you have their backs, you know, I think that's really good for, that's really good for the team. And it just helps them. It's one less thing that they have to worry about. Right.
Yeah. That's awesome. And you were saying your company has been providing a lot of support as well. Is there things that I guess you want to call out, like that I guess was very helpful that the company kind of helped you lead, that maybe you couldn't do it as a manager on your own?
Yeah, like I said, I mean, like, you know, just the really sort of public conversations that they were having. I mean, like, you know, just the communication about, you know, them understanding that this is a possibly difficult time for people, and, you know, just sharing how they're dealing with it helps as well. I think it was also a daily sort of encouragement of, like, you know, it's another day, put your foot in front, one foot in front of the other, we'll get through it together. You know, also, and just making sure people understood, you know, you're working from home, you're okay, right? I mean, we're here to do this. Nobody's losing their jobs over this. You know, all those kind of things. I mean, it's good management. It's good leadership, actually.
That's awesome. Yeah, people feeling like they have a solid foundation, so important. And
yeah, because at this time, like, you know, everybody's kind of anxious about one thing or another. If it's not your health, right, you're anxious about your job, what's this going to do to it, and all that kind of stuff. So I think having that stability and having the leader of the company come out and, you know, share these things really helps. Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm glad to hear that, because, yeah, I mean, I think we've all known people who've maybe lost their jobs during COVID. Mm-hmm. And so it's good to have somebody come out and kind of reassure their employees and kind of give them they're okay to feel uneasy, but, yeah, you know, give them the solid foundation that, like, their job is secure, and, you know, it's okay to be home. You have kids, and it's okay for, yeah, your kid to run in the middle of a meeting and exactly barge through the door.
Photobomb you, you know, yeah, all that.
For your, so I know you said you manage the R&D team. What is, I guess I want to ask a naive question, like, what is R&D kind of, what does it mean to you? And I know you said you've been in R&D pretty much most of your career.
Yeah, all of it.
And so I guess, yeah, what is R&D? Because I know I've never been in an R&D department, so I'm kind of curious how, you know, in my mind, how that differs from a, I guess, maybe a non-R&D team, but I know you can't speak to that side of it, but what is R&D?
What does it mean? You know, I think most of the R&D teams that I've been in have been more D than R, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of places are better at the D than they are, right? We don't, you know, a lot of times you don't really research per se, because of just the way that historically things have done. So, you know, I guess the technical research, you know, lies with usually an architecture team or principal engineers, or, you know, and that tends to be, you know, fewer than, you know, most of the people on the floor who are actually developing the day-to-day, right? What do we do? I don't know. We make software, right? Usually there's a domain that you're working with. So I think this is the thing I love about being in the software industry. You know, I've been in R&D for so many different companies, and I've been, you know, I've done education software, CRM, yeah, so I'm trying to think of all the different things, and I'm failing, but I've done, like, you know, been in the medical field as well, and just, you know, things that you never think you would get into, right? but it's just a different domain. But at the end of the day, you're kind of still doing the same thing. So your skills translate, but mm-hmm. you get to learn a different, type of product. And with that product, you learn that industry. So I think that's extremely interesting. How many kinds of jobs can you kind of say that with?
For sure. I was thinking, when I think of R&D, I kind of think of, like, obviously the term research and development, but I think of, like, innovation and, like, experimentation and things like that. Is that kind of how you see it, where you're experimenting, trying things that maybe not necessarily always from a technology perspective, but maybe even from a kind of product
perspective? Process. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of that. I don't know if that is specific to R&D, right? We went from, like, the days of, like, waterfall to agile, and, I don't know who would ever go back, but I'm sure there's some. But, we do, it's ever changing, right? Technology, I mean, from the days of when I started VBC, C++, then came, like, C#, and then now you've got, all the other, Rails, JavaScript, Node. Like, it's ever changing. So it's a very, I think, dynamic industry. And at the same time, I think, sometimes there is a pressure to stay relevant. Right. But if that is your passion, there's probably no better, industry to be in.
For sure. Is there anything that you find, processes and mechanisms that you have in place to help teams experiment, whether it's with technology or, maybe even product ideas, and not kind of fall into the trap of just, like, the, iterative right. bug fixes and just, like, little features and things like that?
Yeah, I think more and more, we're learning to think that way a little bit, not just to kind of, look at things and go, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do it, right? To question a little bit more, do things have to be done a certain way? Have you ever thought of this? It doesn't always have to be complicated. But in terms of technology, I mean, from time to time you have, like, hack fests, right? And, these things are great, sort of like 2-3 day things where people just kind of get to code and, not have to worry about, like, someone else having to maintain the code, or not to say that hasn't happened. I mean, there's things that come out of Hackfest and you're like, all right, let's take that to production, right? And yeah. That's happened as well. Day to day, it's, I think you're encouraged to be, what's the word I'm looking for? Encouraged to be, creative, right? With how you solve things, but at the same time, we all have deadlines to meet and stuff like that. We have sessions at work where people share their ideas as well. So typically, obviously, they're trying to solve some kind of problem. We've got a lot of good sort of, like, principal engineers who are there to give guidance as well. So I mean, you're encouraged to obviously be creative and come up with solutions, but then also not taught not to sort of, like, spin and go into, like, analysis paralysis, and there's help if you just ask for it, right?
That's true. Yeah, because so you can certainly get stuck into doing things for the sake of trying something new, right? And you want to be careful about kind of that process and actually deliver
the
product at the end of the day, right?
Exactly. But then again, balance, right? Because you don't want everybody to be like, ah, oh, I'm just here to execute. Yeah. A lot of times, I mean, that's what we do, right? But yeah, sometimes
Well,
it
that
has
took
to
us full circle with the balance, and so we're back at that.
happen. Balance.
If somebody wanted to kind of get in touch with you, okay, I guess I hope I did a good job of selling how good of a manager you are, and you've done a good job of selling Galvanize. If we want to get in touch with you, whether it was to ask questions or for job opportunities and things like that, how can they get a hold of you?
I'm on LinkedIn. I'm sure you can find Gwen Rawson on LinkedIn, or get in touch with her, Sam. He'll point you to me. Yeah.
Awesome. Anything else, Gwen, before we end the session for today?
I don't know, management words of wisdom. Not
Yikes.
sh not sure I have a lot, but I do know one thing about coming from the world of development into management is much as we love the hands-on tech and doing that, I think the first thing to think about when you're considering development is whether you can live with the admin stuff. I can't tell you how many times someone has told me that they wanted to be a manager, and the first thing I get them to do is be Scrum Master for a team, and by the end of week two, they're like, "Forget it. Like, no, I don't want to be a manager." You gotta not hate the admin stuff. It's a necessary part of the job. Doesn't have to be your favorite part of it, but it's a
Yeah.
necessary part. So if you hate it, it's a pretty miserable existence, right? Because it's something that you do day in and day out. You know what I'm talking about. But no, it's a I think building a team, getting them to work together, working together with them. I always say a team that's happily producing, that's what I'm always aiming for. And when it gets there, boy, that's probably one of the most rewarding things that you can get.
Wow, that sounded perfect. I think we can end on that note. Thank you so much, Gwen, and thank you everybody for listening in today.